welcome to the December 20th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your post-Christmas tech questions in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Our Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite, and Exigent Chief Security Officer Amos Asap. Hello, Amos.
Hey, Kent. How's it going?
Good to hear you today.
Glad to be back.
Staying warm?
Yeah, had to break out the big coat today.
That's awesome. That's you'll have to send me a picture of that later. Also joining us, Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer. Hello, John.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Can you hear me?
How was baby's first Christmas?
Good. She's doing pretty well. She we didn't buy much for her at 5 weeks old. We figured she would forgive us someday. she was just as happy to be fed and hopefully get some sleep. So it was a good Christmas.
Making lots of memories. And also via phone from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre, Jeff Litterk is with us. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, all.
Welcome back. I guess it's our last show of the year, which sounds kind of weird, but, we've done it probably, not collectively, but collectively about 20 years or so. But, we're even back next week, so we got our contract renewed, guys, for another year. Are you with me? I hope so.
I hope they got my rider
in there. I haven't seen those terms yet.
Right.
I'll have to get that NDA out to you. But anyway, this is a listener interactive program. Folks, if you have questions, we'll try to provide that answer. We sort of build the show today as that holiday helper sort of episode. If you got a piece of tech for Christmas and the WPS button didn't work, maybe we can help you figure it out. I don't know. That's my go-to. But if that doesn't work, I'm not sure I can help. But we have a whole panel of folks here that'll give it a shot for you.
Have you gotten the WPS button? I've never been able to make that work, and I've always had to go the long way around. Does it actually function? I assume that was
believe it or not, I've got some experience with the WPS button.
Really?
And for those that haven't heard of this, it's Wi-Fi protected setup, WPS. And I have looking at my head, you can tell I pulled my hair out quite a bit on trying, and particularly trying to get network printers up and running for people. The manuals are maddening. The constant links off to websites for help are crazy. And I know this because about a week ago I did this. Person replaced their home router. And needed to get their wireless printer back up and running, and I went down the garden path that they had started me on, by diligently explaining to me how they had done these steps that they had been told to do in the book and by the manual and things, and so I tried that way, and it was probably an hour and a half later, after several reboots and more hair loss. I said, hey, you know that new router of yours, it doesn't have a button on it, does it? Well, yeah, hit the button, Bob's your uncle.
Wow.
I should have went there. That should have been my first thought. But I don't know why it's not, but I did not have to do it. There was no finding the hidden menu and putting in the Wi-Fi password because printers are notoriously not very user-friendly as far as, like, displays. It was just like, if this color button flashes this many times, it means this. If it's this color and it flashes this many times, it could mean this. That kind of thing. So hitting one button, hitting another button, having them talk and all work later, makes you happy that you're done. Let me just put it that way.
Sure. You know, a couple of years ago, we had talked about in some large office buildings how they put thermostats on some floors that are just there to make people feel good about they don't actually function, they don't do anything, but it kind of makes you feel good that you've got control over something.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I feel about the WPS buttons every time I've ever tried to use it. I feel like it's just not hooked up to anything, and I hit the button, nothing happens, can't get anything connected, and end up going the long way around. But
Well, I got to tell you, after about an hour and a half of working on this thing, I was just about ready to throw in the towel. And then it was just kind of like, getting hit by a shovel in the head. It was like, oh, realization. Should have probably tried that first. Don't know why I didn't think of it. But, yeah, so that actually did work. And, folks, if you see a button that's labeled WPS, that's what it's for. It's to make things go easier for you. But, yeah, well, Amos,
I feel like you already put the audience to sleep over WPS.
Sorry. Wake us
Should
back up, John.
Started. Come on, Kent.
Wake us back up. That was my one trick. I mean, that's my one thing I can say is, yeah, just hit the button and it's going to work. Going through those manuals and all those websites, yeah, that's not going to work for you. Probably just going to lead to hours of frustration, but just hit the button and it's going to be fine. Yeah. Amos, what'd you get for Christmas? Anything techie? Anything fun?
You know, ironically, the my favorite thing that I got that was techie is so low tech. It's retro. I finally got my hands on one of those Nintendo classics, with all of the games that are built into the system.
The little mini NES console?
Yeah, the little tiny thing the size of your phone, you know, that comes with every game, or I shouldn't say every, but, you know, 30 of the most popular games. And I tell you, the adults from probably mid-50s to mid-20s had more fun with that and the nostalgia that it brings back and Super Mario Brothers 3 and Ninja Gaiden and all kinds of stuff like that. It was just a lot of fun. And there was a time where I could play those games and I was okay at it. Now it's just frustratingly embarrassing, but we played for hours and hours on that. That was fun.
Yeah. Excellent. Jeff,
somebody tweet a picture of at Target for $25 you can buy. I mean, it almost looks like a calculator, but it's this handheld game. I'm sure it's just battery operated, to play Oregon Trail, and there's like four buttons on it. And you just, you can play the original, like, Apple 2GS Oregon Trail game. I thought that was pretty funny. That same idea where you're talking about, Amos, like, you know, old nostalgia coming back in more of a modern, like, usable format, something that's more handheld. Pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the old gaming stuff was really big this year. I know Walmart, you could actually buy old arcade games, and the way they did it was you had a full stand-up arcade, if you remember back in the days, kind of console with made out of wood and stuff, and then they put an LCD screen in there and a joystick and buttons, just like the old arcade cabinets used to have, and it was a little bit shorter, but you could play your favorite old arcade games from the 80s just as they were back then with the same controllers with the whole arcade type experience. And it was like $300. There was a lot of retro Sega Genesis and ColecoVision and stuff out. One thing I will mention on the Nintendo, if you do like that and you want to get one, get them fast. They will not be available once the stock runs out, and they will not be made again. Either the classic or the Super Nintendo version one, which I have. What's in the stores is in the stores. There's no more coming. So,
Yeah, I also find that hard to believe. If they sell out, they will make more.
Nintendo's actually sold out multiple times, and they have announced this will be the last run, and they will not be making this, nor will they be making a classic Nintendo 64. This is directly
no matter how much money they make, they're not going to make any more.
So this is the president of Nintendo saying, "This is it, get up," and then once they're gone, they're gone. They're going to focus going on the Switch, which is their current console for any retro gaming from this point on.
Excellent. And, Joel, welcome to the show.
Hey.
We hadn't formally introduced you yet. Joel Brovoit, our Mac guru. I already have a question for you.
Oh, great. I love him.
Yeah. Here you go. Wake up. Wake John up. My printer has its own Wi-Fi address. It seems to always override my home Wi-Fi, and my Mac keeps connecting to it. Should I disable the printer Wi-Fi to prevent this from happening?
I see. He doesn't really have his own Wi-Fi address. It has Wi-Fi, and it broadcasts a network. This happens actually at my house quite often. What I would recommend, rather than disabling the Wi-Fi, unless you're not using it, if you don't use the Wi-Fi for the printer, then sure, yeah, go ahead and disable Wi-Fi. There's no reason to have it on if you're not using it. And it's a pain to, you know, turn it on and then turn it off when you're not using it. So I would either kind of decide you're going to use wireless printing or you're not going to. If you're not going to, yes, turn it off. If you are going to, all you have to do is really go into your settings and go to Wi-Fi, select that network, and then there's a little eye over where you select the network. If you click on that, I'm talking, this is on a phone, by the way. It's very similar on an iPad. It would also be similar on the desktop, although maybe slightly more intuitive. And then you can just click on a button that says forget this network. And then it won't automatically connect to that network unless you tell it to connect to that network again. So, and you can do that on the computer too. It's a very similar thing. I assume it's very similar for Windows as well. So that's what I would do. Unless you're not using Wi-Fi to print, then absolutely sure, just turn it off.
Okay, excellent. Back to holiday giving. Joel, did you buy some more light bulbs or?
They're all replaced in my house. So I do have to say I've been touting how great they are and that they don't burn out. I had my first Wi-Fi enabled white light bulb burn out just this November. So that's like 6 years. So that's pretty good. 6 years without replacing a bulb is a good deal. So
how do you tell when do they have the same smoke filled?
No, not at all. They act funny as you would expect any electronic device to. They work, they blink, and in this case, only about half the LEDs went out, so it was just really dim.
Hmm.
Took it out and inspected it, and indeed that was the case. So I got my money's worth out of that bulb, I can guarantee you. So no more light bulbs, and I almost sprung for one of the new Amazon Echoes. They have new versions of the Echo Show, which I really like. That's the Amazon device with the screen. No, actually did mostly low tech stuff this year, mostly because if it comes out and it's tech, I already have it. So, you know, Christmas is just another time to buy, as far as I can tell. I am eyeing, and I know you are, Kent. Maybe you already did the Amazon's DVR, kind of their over-the-air DVR that's Alexa enabled. Did you wind up getting that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
That's the Replay, right, or something?
I don't remember what it's
something.
Called.
Yeah, it's got a weird name.
Yeah, it's basically Amazon Fire TV plus wireless tuner, or not wireless tuner, but over-the-air tuner that allows you to DVR over-the-air shows and has its own built-in scheduler and all sorts of this and that and the other thing. It kind of replaces a TiVo, if you will, for
and
anybody.
And you were right;
cutter.
It is a wireless tuner because you set it up anywhere in the house.
Right, but you do have to plug in your antenna. Yeah, so not wireless from that
TV.
Point of view. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. It does require you have an Amazon Fire TV hooked up to each TV you're going to use it on. So a bit of a cost there, but a savings because there's no monthly fee. So yes, that's kind of what I'm going to use my quote unquote Christmas money to get. So
it was an interesting article or story on NPR the other day. It was a point of view of one of the panelists about I think Amazon was having a content sale, or either they did or they're going to in the last few days or in the days coming. And they were talking about Amazon trying to place as many things in the homes as they can, and then and the reason is because you're going to eventually need to buy the content through them to put on these devices. Thought it was a really interesting article or an interesting take on things, and it was a slightly dark view, but as we go forward, knowing what devices you're going to buy and why, I guess, and where you're going to be able to view them on and listen to your entertainment and see things is a very interesting take on the future of media, and brings out a lot of other questions.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference, you know, 2 or 3 years makes. I think 4 years ago, we just talked about Amazon as the place to buy stuff, and now it's a you speak about it when you talk about Netflix, or you speak about it when you talk about Apple or Google. Yeah, kind of amazing the speed with which they've entered several markets that they weren't in at all.
Well, and think about it. So, like, by being the marketplace for everything, Amazon gains the data of what people are buying, what people are looking for, what type of products have the best margin. And so essentially they can sit back and let the marketplace and let the users and let the data point them to the next business that they should go, right? So, like, they learn that batteries are a really great product. Like, everyone needs batteries, and they're really great margins, so now they have their own battery product. And so they can use the data to it's really like it's an unfair game, because if you're a seller, you need to use Amazon, but then you might do really well, and they say, great, now we're going to move into your business. You know, and then they acquire a grocery store, or they acquire something else, or they start a new thing. It's a pretty unstoppable force.
And, well, one of the biggest tech stories of the year was probably Amazon's growth in the DSP side of things, so demand side platform. So, yeah, that data, all the data. And, of course, they're not as big as probably Facebook and Google at the moment. But
in what terms? In terms of
gathering user data, gathering what you do and your habits and what you watch.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if I'd agree with that. I'd actually say, you know, when you talk about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Does everybody want to argue with me on that? Okay.
I think we all disagree with you.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, when you talk about what people buy, there's no better way to tell what somebody does and likes than to figure out what they spend their money on.
Yeah, but in the world, though, not everybody has Amazon Prime and buys things through just Amazon. You know, think of Google and Facebook and the, well, I don't want to use the word billions, but millions of other people that use other platforms. There's a lot of other data gathering going on.
Oh, sure, yeah, no question about that. They might have a larger reach. I just think if somebody's going to offer me data on customers and I was going to be able to pick from Facebook, Google, or Amazon, I'd rather have Amazon's if I was a business person, because then I know what they actually bought. I mean,
agreed.
For the most part. There's a lot of totally shooting in the dark. I may be wrong about that.
The information that might come from Google, though, you know, location tracking, where you've been, where you've visited, what your travel habits are,
sure,
what your commute times are. Sometimes it scares me when I wake up and my phone says, you know, it snowed today and Western Avenue has a 7-minute delay because of something. And okay.
But you have to remember, with the Amazonian devices, they are with their tablets and different things, they're tracking that kind of information too. And Amazon, kind of like Facebook, is doing a lot of affiliations with different websites. They're starting to push their Amazon Pay, where you can pay through Amazon on totally separate third-party sites, not associated with Amazon, and kind of tracking that information as you're going through different other, you know, consumer websites buying stuff. So never forget, Amazon may have started off kind of, as people think, as a warehouse or shipping book company. They are a tech company, and they're doing everything the same way as Google and Facebook are for data tracking and data analysis on their users. I mean, CNN had this kind of end-of-year special, and one of their comedians kind of said, all I now have to do is imagine something, and Amazon puts the product right on my page to buy. So Amazon is getting very, very interesting, and users are starting to see, like Facebook, you barely think about something, and suddenly Amazon's trying to sell it to you on their homepage.
Yeah. Yeah, they may not be the biggest right now, but they're getting there. That's certainly one of the biggest tech stories of the year.
Biggest, sorry, quickly, just because when you talk about, like, market cap, you know, this year in 2018, we had periods where both Apple and then Amazon and then even Microsoft for a little bit have been jockeying for being the quote-unquote biggest company in the world. And so that's going to be an interesting thing, too. These large tech players continue, you know, their market cap based on their stock price continues to move a little bit. But in terms of biggest, there's just a lot of different ways to look at it.
There are a lot of different ways to slice that, and thanks for mentioning that. That wasn't even on my list But that's certainly one of those things. We're going to talk more about what's on my list and what's on the list of, I guess, my panelists today, as well as we got a couple more tech questions to get through, believe it or not. We're going to do that after this quick break. You are in the moment on STPB Radio. I'm Ken Osborne, and we have successfully switched gears, and we're talking tech with the computer guys. And we are a listener interactive program, so we'd love to hear from you. In the moment at stpb.org is our email address. You can shoot us a text. It's 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. Joel, a couple of more Apple questions for you. I'll queue them up here. First one, I received an Apple Series 3 Apple Watch. It's not even out of the box yet. What do you recommend as far as apps for it and such? So I guess I don't know why it's not out of the box yet, but how about some incentive? Why does this person want to get that watch out of the box?
Yeah, definitely when you get it out, when you set it up the first time, of course you're going to need to do that with a device, with your phone. It's going to load on all the apps that have, or it's going to ask you first, but it will load on all of the apps that have Apple Watch apps with them. So I would, I would maybe reserve judgment before you start adding apps to see the ones that you're already using on your phone and see if you can utilize the Apple Watch versions of those. If you bought it for exercise, there's lots of great apps. There's an app called Strava, which is a running and cycling app. I know it's popular. Nike Run Club is a very popular one. I know a lot of people buy these watches for that. If you've got the Series 3, so you can use it swimming. There's a swimming app called My Swim Pro. You could use that. And then, of course, if you're a doctor or into medicine, WebMD is very popular on the Apple Watch, so you might check that out.
Does that interface with the
it does
the pulse with, and all that?
Well, WebMD doesn't. WebMD is actually for physicians and physician assistants to look up medications and dosing. And things like that. And it's very useful for people in the medical world. Basically, if you're in the medical world, I'm mixing that up. It's not WebMD. It's I'll remember it. I'll have to.
It's the encyclopedia of his.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it is. My wife uses it, and I just can't remember it off the top of my head. I'll have to come back and let you know. But there's a physician one.
Joel,
although he's not necessarily asking about that.
What are the advantages or maybe, let's say, upgrades in terms of kind of health sector from the Series 4 to the Series 3? Because, they geared the watches like, hey, we can track all this data, but they're really pushing the fourth generation as a big
that's because push. That one, the fourth generation has the ECG built in, so the electrocardiogram. It's the first device on the market that's approved on the consumer level to actually track your heart health in the same way that an ECG would if you were in the hospital. Allows you to keep track of not only heart rate, but if there's irregularity in your pulse, and can actually notify you if you're going to pre-notify you if you're going to have maybe a possible heart condition, or can even go so far as contact 911. I think this next year we're going to see lots of stories on maybe that helping people, and I wouldn't doubt that we'll probably see several stories on it not working correctly, it being the first generation of that product.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems a little bit I don't want to say scary, but like it seems like there should be some individual tuning to that, maybe by a physician who would say, okay, here's what your standards are when it gets outside of these limits.
And you can adjust some settings on it. Maybe you would want to check with a doctor on some of that. And of course you can just turn it off. So it's not automatically turned on. But I think for the people that maybe need that, or of the appropriate age, or if you've got this is another thing, it will also contact, the fourth generation will also notice a fall. So if somebody were to fall, it will do that and contact. We're talking about the Series 4, so that's not exactly within the scope of the question. But definitely, if you're buying it for health reasons, probably the 4 is the one to go with. There's an alarm clock that I use on my watch all the time. I really like. I tend to actually charge my watch early evening, so I'll take it off for a while, and then I'll actually wear it overnight because I like to, you know, keep track of sleep cycle and stuff like that. So first thing, I guess, to make a long version of that short, just use the apps that are already going to be installed from the apps that you have. Check those out. And then you can kind of move into it, whether you want to start using SoundCloud and listen to audio that way, or podcasts, or there's lots of different ones that you can try. So do that, and then maybe come back and check out some new apps. But most apps have a component that is also on the phone.
And I think the one other tip I'd add, app aside from apps, is make sure to be proactive in controlling the notifications. I think a lot of people buy an Apple Watch because they think, you know, I want to use my phone less. I want to look at my phone less and separate myself. But if you don't be proactive, you're going to be really annoyed because you'll get a ton of texts or a ton of notifications and your wrist will be buzzing all day long.
Yeah, and I think
so you're proactive in what you want.
I think you're absolutely right about that. I think you have to use it for a little while to see, you know, what notifications do I really want. I was very much just like you're saying, the first few months that I had it on, I had all the notifications on, and I'm like, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know that. So, you know, you can adjust lots of different settings for notifications. You can let certain things, certain people come through and not. So definitely don't take the first week or two into account. After it's like any other brand new device for you. You're going to have to do some adjusting.
It's going to make things worse, isn't it? You want to spend less time with your phone, but all of a sudden you're getting deluged with notifications on your wrist.
Or unless you turn those off, depending on how you want to use it.
Yeah, if you don't,
I know my wife doesn't use any notifications on her watch. Doesn't use them at all, much to my chagrin. If I want to text her and she doesn't have it, her phone near her, so but she doesn't use any of them. She uses it kind of as a watch and to check the weather and a few other things. But so it just depends on how you use it.
So do you or John, you can answer this too, and Amos if you have, and Jeff as well, if you have the watches or the gear or whatever, do you ever respond with your watch for text messages and things, or do you go find your phone and answer that way? Yeah, just out of curiosity.
I started doing it once I thought the voice, like the Siri, got a lot better, and I would do voice text, or the watch responding to text has some quick commands. So, if it's like some auto responses, so, hey, did you pick up the groceries? And then you can just click yes. Things like that. I like those quick, short responses.
Okay.
Yeah, and I do the same on mine. But, yeah, you have to really watch your notifications and what apps can send notifications. I kind of keep a pretty tight hold on it. So when the watch does buzz me, I know it's important enough that I need to take the time to actually, you know, go look at it and either dismiss it or deal with it at that point. Anything complex has to be done through the phone. But, you know, the simple yes, no kind of stuff can be done through the watch pretty easily.
On the Apple Watch, and I obviously have the – not obviously, but I have the Android version, right, of a smartwatch. Can you set the, say, the vibration to give you a different type of vibration, maybe a 2 or a 3 or a long or a short, based on the type of alert, or is it just you just don't know what the vibration means, you just have to look?
It doesn't really vibrate, although I suppose it could. The notification is usually the haptic pulse. It's like
a tap.
Yeah, like a tap on your wrist. Okay. You know, I've never actually tried to do that. No, I don't think that there is. It's so subtle that a lot of people I know don't even notice and you can set the strength of which it does. But for the most part, no. It you know, has the same kind of
alert
for feedback
each message,
for each message, each type of message, and the visual might be different.
Okay, so
you were going to say, John, did you have a? I didn't mean to cut you off.
Uh, I was thinking you can cut to Amos's question. I was thinking you can customize a little bit, but I also have not done that, so I shouldn't. Don't quote me on that.
I'll have
but,
to check it
so,
out.
So mine vibrates, and so I've got certain people set up that it will vibrate three times. So if I know if it goes then it's worth looking at.
Honestly, I would like that
because otherwise,
I hope my watch does that.
I found myself instead of pulling my phone out during meetings and that sort of stuff, which is what I was trying to avoid, I will look at my watch, but that just makes everybody think I have somewhere to go because I keep looking at the time when really I'm trying to
Amos
be subtle.
Is really bored.
Right, yeah. And that,
you can do it a little more subtly, though.
a little bit.
I agree. I agree that totally happened to me, too, and I feel I don't like that because, you know, same type of thing. I would had a watch thinking that, you know, if I'm at dinner or at lunch with somebody, I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm going to be in the moment, respectful. And then I would legitimately just be looking at the time, and then they assume that I was getting a text messages or reading an email or something like that, and I always felt bad about that. But
interesting.
The cross we bear.
Yeah. Did you ever – you had Glass. You had Google Glass, John, right?
I had it for, about a year, and I sold it still. There was still a market, thankfully. Sold it for what I bought it for, but – I never legitimately wore it outside of, a few times. Like, I never wore it on a typical day. It just didn't. Go ahead.
The newer versions of that are out, I believe. Do those give you notifications when it doesn't interrupt anything going on in the room, like looking at your watch or looking at your phone or, you know, tapping your foot, you know?
Google Glass, as we know it, is dead. Like, they shut it down. So there aren't newer versions of that. But you're absolutely right that we're going to see. I mean, it's just a matter of time until, like, a Warby Parker comes out with smart glasses. Or, you know, even Snapchat has their spectacles, which is their kind of sunglasses that allow you to take photos. You know, I think we're talking about some of these early days kind of annoyances and benefits of an Apple Watch. But I think the concept of wearing a smart device is going to be ubiquitous as we move forward, whether it be watch, glasses, you know, and then someday a part of our body or inside our body, who knows. But I think those are things they have to figure out, is notifications, distractions. You know, you wouldn't want to be driving thinking, well, hey, I have glasses, so I'm not going to look at my phone. I won't be distracted. But then you're looking up to the left or up to the right because of some sort of notification.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Joel, we had another quick question for you. We had talked about headphones on previous various different types of headphones and pods and things. And the listener had a question about how wireless headphones would work on airlines in flight. Can you use those in flight? And would that be a good reason not to update into one of the newer iPads or phones if they don't have the headphone jack? Just, I guess, a curious flyer about the new headphones we've been talking about, the Bluetooth ones.
Well, to my knowledge, you can use short-range wireless-like Bluetooth headphones. I haven't heard that there's any rules that say you can't. And from personal experience, I have used them on the plane. John, have you? Wireless headphones on the plane?
AirPods?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think there's any rule that says you can't, and certainly there's nothing that would block the signal or anything.
Or is the question really referring to, like, if you wanted to use the onboard entertainment, you would have to have something that would physically, is that what they're referring to, Kent?
If they are, then I would probably just say, you know, borrow the ones that they have, right, if that's really a thing, or maybe throw an old pair in.
I've experienced that, where I've had my AirPods and I didn't have, you know, a headphone jack and I wasn't able to listen to the in-flight entertainment. I've also been on I can't remember which airline that was, but on another airline I've seen in the settings they had Bluetooth pairing. So I think that's something that'll probably get fixed eventually, but yeah, right now it's usually an issue.
I mean, I like mine so well, and I think everybody that's used, we're talking AirPods here right now from Apple, similar devices from other companies. I like mine so much, I would just as soon give my phone up than give those up, frankly.
And you were like the 1 millionth person I've heard say that in the last six weeks or so.
Yep, absolutely.
All the people who got them for Christmas or just picked them up randomly, I can't stop hearing how much people like those things.
Yeah, they work really well. They work about two times better than I expected.
Excellent. Well, another opportunity for a break. We need to step away for just a second. We do have a listener question about Teslas and the future and solar, and we will get back to that question after this quick break. And we are back to the December 20th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. And just to remind you who are the folks around the table are today, we have Mac guru Joel Borovalite is here from Exigent. Their Chief Security Officer Amos Aesop is here with us. Lemonly's John T. Meyer. And from the Bureau and Peer, Jeff Litterick joins us. You can get a hold of any of us with the address in the moment at sdpb.org or shoot us a text, 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. A question came in over the transom. I'm curious if you would entertain buying a Tesla Model 3 in the near future. How about their solar and battery packs? Thanks, JB. Well, JB, I'm assuming you're talking about the Powerwall when you're talking about the battery packs and maybe the solar roof when you're talking about solar there. Let's just kind of go around the table. John T. Meyer, you're kind of on the edge. You love Tesla, correct?
Yeah, my answer is an absolutely yes. I'm on the list for the Model 3. I put down my $1,000 deposit. But for me, I'm mainly waiting for that all-wheel drive version. Obviously, in South Dakota, we really need that. And so right now, they're still selling more of a, I can't remember what the luxury kind of Model 3. It's, I think, more in the $45,000, $47,000 range. They haven't got to the manufacturing yet of that kind of $30,000-$35,000 car that they had promised. Okay. So if you want to jump the line and get the more expensive one, you can, but I'm not in a hurry. And I definitely know that I'll need the all-wheel drive, but absolutely I would entertain it.
Okay. Joel?
Yeah, also the wrong person to ask. I would entertain any of them, any and all of the above. So absolutely. But if I was a regular person, if I had to step out and think of that, I don't see a huge use for the Powerwall unless you have a car. And energy prices are pretty cheap here in South Dakota, so I'm not sure there'd be a big payoff, at least right away. So I might hold off on that if I had an electric car. As far as the roof, unfortunately, South Dakota is not the best place to go into solar, although the payoff is a lot sooner than one would expect. And if you're already going to replace your roof anyway, the solar roofing that they have both looks great and is very durable. So I might look at it in that case. As far as the car goes, I'm totally with John on that. Personally, absolutely I would, but I would definitely want an all-wheel drive around here. This season especially, I think, would tell you that.
I wonder, you know, I should do more research on this, but is the car sufficiently heavy because of the batteries that it's going to do pretty good in the winters in South Dakota?
I'm sure they probably work that out. Don't you think, Kent?
I think so.
Yeah. It's from the people that I know that have them, it's not an issue whatsoever. So,
all right. Amos, have you given Tesla a thought?
You know, I had looked at doing that same sign-up thing that John did. I did not do it. I guess I don't have a good reason why. I'm kind of in the middle of the road. If you gave me one, I'd certainly take it.
Right.
Right.
Said everybody in the audience.
Right. But just a quick Google, I was looking at some of the used ones, and they're certainly maintaining or holding their resale value. You know, they're still kind of the avant-garde for technology when it comes to cars. And, you know, I see this as well. They're pretty spectacular cars now. In 5 years, where are they going to be? Where's that technology going to go? What's the range going to be? And you know, we are lucky enough to have the superchargers here in Sioux Falls, which is nice. But, you know, if you're somebody who lives in Mobridge, or you're somebody who lives, you know, someplace where you've got to drive a significant distance to get to those, it might not be as convenient. Sure, you can have one at home, but, you know, the time to charge is a lot longer. So I guess that doesn't answer your question. Yes, I would take one if it were moderately.
Amos would take a free car.
Right. Yeah.
I think everybody.
One thing that's so cool to think about, and this won't just be Tesla in the future. This will be all of our cars, if we even own a car. It's just the fact that you can do software downloads, right? So, like, they come out with a new feature, and you just download it, and all of a sudden your car has it. It's not like a type of thing where you buy a car, and as soon as you drive off the lot, it's already, you know, dated, and you lose the latest and greatest, and you can't get the new gadgets. I think that's really cool. You know, they have a new feature, and you just connect to Wi-Fi and you download it and your car has it.
Yeah, and if you want a faster engine, you can get a software upgrade to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of blows my mind, frankly. But I know that that's kind of a popular thing for them.
All right. Well, I think we've sufficiently answered the question. The answer would be yes, maybe, and probably not. So.
You're saying probably not
on the solar. Well, on you were thinking on the solar roof. If you've gone to the calculator and you've seen, you know, what the payoff's going to be in the number of years, have you done that?
Yeah, I mean, I have. I mean, I think there's other reasons other than cheaper energy to do that. Like I said, if you're already getting a roof or in the near future need to, that definitely decreases the amount that you'd have to put out to get that replaced. So that might be a reason to do it. I don't know. I'd flip those around. I'd be more apt to get a roof before I would a battery, frankly.
Yeah. I, you know, yeah. There's been thinking about a lot of different things. But as I research, you know, what's available commercially right now for solar, and then I think it was even this morning I was reading, they've got some sort of an ink-printed design that they're doing on solar panels that's going to make things a whole lot cheaper to manufacture solar, and so a lot of, you know, some things coming down the pike, and might just need to hang out and wait a little while. I'm not a totally an early adopter on things, especially expensive things, so sometimes it's better to wait a little bit. But as it matures, we'll definitely be looking at
that. I found an article here that says, and this is from early November, so things could have changed since then, but Tesla says their solar roofing tiles are about $22 a square foot as opposed to like $1 to $2 for asphalt shingles. So you're talking a significant increase, but the number of years it takes to recoup that should be, well, according to this article, should be less than 17.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not exactly a fair comparison, because asphalt shingles aren't quite as durable as the...
Well, and it depends on the size of your roof, too, I suppose.
And it also depends, you know, you also have to take into account your asphalt roof doesn't generate power. So, you know, there are some give and takes in that. Not exactly a fair comparison, but I do understand what you're saying.
Sure.
Right. Okay, well, we are just getting down to the sort of the nitty gritty on the end of the show here. We haven't covered many of the biggest tech stories of the year. Haven't really needed to, but I look forward to following up on those next week on the show. We wanted to do a few little tech predictions, and we'll just go around the table and maybe talk about a few of those. I hear that there are many. IPOs waiting to happen in the new year in 2019, and so I'm interested to see how those go. I hear Pinterest and Airbnb and Uber and Lyft, some other companies that I haven't heard of much, but I need to do more research on. They're calling it IPO-looza in 2019, I'm wondering what that's going to do with the markets. And if the markets are going to respond as well as they have on other IPOs that launched in 18, and we'll see, time will tell, as they say, and That's what I'm looking forward to, I guess, in 2019 is tracking tracking companies such as those and seeing and what pops up for competitors as well with some of those. But Joel, what are you looking forward to in 19?
As far as tech, you know, I really am interested to see how things go with digital content. I think that's going to be some of the big story, you know, the further rise of providers like Netflix and Amazon. And we're also going to see one from Disney and Warner Brothers, so streaming services. So, you know, another $10, another $10 added to your streaming library. So then by then there will be at least five major streaming providers. So it'll be interesting to see where the breaking point is. You know, you're probably not going to have HBO plus Hulu plus Disney plus Netflix. There's got to be a breaking point somewhere. So I think that's what I'm really interested to see how that goes. Right now there's over 500 scripted shows, TV shows available. You know, just lots of content out there. It's just a really interesting time.
Okay. John T. Meyer, what's piqued your interest?
Yeah, you guys touched on two of them. I think those IPOs will be really interesting, especially Uber. They need to probably IPO around $120 billion to make sense for investors. But I think 2019, you might finally see the year where some of the big tech gets broken up, where whether the government or regulation or antitrust steps in. You know, Facebook had a pretty rough year, especially last couple of months. I think they probably are most on the hot seat between Facebook, Google, Amazon. I think you're going to see at least one of them be kind of in the bullseye for the government. And I just think these companies are getting too big and have and play in too many areas where someone's going to try to, you know, the government is going to try to hold them back. So I don't know. I don't think you're going to see a lot of it. Stuff like that moves slow, but I think some of it will start to happen in 2019.
Okay. Amos, any predictions for 19?
Predictions. It kind of touches on what Joel was talking about with the streaming and the services that come along is 5G coming in and having that, you know, the speed and the bandwidth that brings along with it and the ease and convenience that that those streaming services will have. And will we start to... you know, just as we're cutting cords for, you know, our phones and that sort of stuff, will we really start to cut those same cords for digital media? Will we need at our house? Will we need cable internet? Will we need DSL? Will we need those things anymore? Or will 5G wireless just become how we receive everything?
Interesting. That's a mind blower. Jeff Litterick, any predictions for 2019 for us?
No. We have it already covered, but I will say, physical media, in many ways, I was reading an article, is about dead. So over the next year, with market declines in, you know, old physical CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, it may be a very dour market for those people. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. We're going to find out if all those things come true in the coming year. Unfortunately, it's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my panelists today and remind you that SDPB is always there for you with our app. Or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay warm.